This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Put it back toward the line for Bufflin. Need it for Sherratt. Back for Bufflin on the near side. Bufflin walks in. Bufflin on his forehand. Shooting. Stop. Rebound. They score! Dustin Bufflin knocked his own rebound out of the air. Pass Jimmy Howard. And for the first time tonight, Winnipeg has a lead. It's 2-1 for the Jets.
With his 500th career point, Dustin Bufflin propels the Winnipeg Jets to a 2-1 victory last night in Motown. The Jets victorious against the Red Wings by that 2-1 margin, bouncing back after the disappointing home ice defeat on Wednesday night against the Toronto Maple Leafs. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by my colleague, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuk, away from the program on this Saturday morning. Ezzy, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Did you just sleep here last night after you did your pre and post duties with Kevin O? A quick turnaround for this Saturday morning here after the early morning after the late night. Anyways, as he last night, the Jets and the Red Wings in a Friday night battle in Detroit. The Red Wings, obviously.
Hold on, now I think we're good.
Okay, the Red Wings, one of the bottom feeding teams.
I was on the other mic yesterday. I think that's what the problem was.
You got a little confused as to which mic you're
I'm throwing
to be
James
using.
Off here.
Okay, now we're all good. We got thumbs up all around. Okay, this is a smooth operation.
Are we going to classify Dave's absence as an upper body injury like Huss, or just a healthy scratch?
I would describe Dave as being sent down to the minors. In fact, he was put on waivers. We'll see if anyone claims him. Otherwise, we're going to put him on waivers for purpose of terminating his contract.
But he could still come to Finland.
Yeah, I guess.
If he clears waivers,
he could still go to Finland. I mean, I suppose. I don't think he's going to Finland, but in any event.
Or he's
going to
join Marco Dano in Colorado.
It's possible if he gets picked up on waivers by the Avalanche. I don't see that happening, I'll be perfectly honest. Anyways, last night, the Jets with the 2-1 victory. The Red Wings opened the scoring, of course, with Andreas Athanasiou getting his fourth of the season. And then you sort of got the feeling, at least I got the feeling, during that second period when the Jets had multiple power plays in a row, certainly dominated the play in that second period, but couldn't get anything past Jimmy Howard. And Jimmy Howard looked like he was putting up a brick wall, and you could see the Jets getting progressively more and more frustrated as they have some clear-cut looks and they have some golden chances that they either fire wide or Jimmy Howard comes up with some great saves on it. I'm thinking about the pass from Nikolai Ehlers to Brian Little that Jimmy Howard...
That was a great save.
It was a great save. It was a great pass also.
Yep.
The pass from Ehlers there to be able to see Little diving hard to the net there was a great play. In any event, the Jets, it looks like they're running into a brick wall, and they finally are able to get a crack in it. Kyle Connor gets the power play goal late in the second period, and then Dustin Bufflin, as we played off the top, gets the game-winning goal, and the Jets hold on to take the 2-1 victory over Detroit.
Right. That second period, Drew, was night and day from the first period.
Yes.
I mean, the first period, I wouldn't say it was the worst first period I've seen from the Jets this year, but I thought Detroit was the better team. And you
no
mentioned
question.
Andreas Athanasiou, Mr. 5A's in his name.
Mm-hmm.
He drew the penalty on Jacob Trouba and then scored on the power play. And if you remember, Gustav Nyquist hit the post in that first period as well. And then Darren Helm, when the Jets were on the power play,
mm-hmm.
he had that shorthanded opportunity. So the Red Wings could have easily had two or three goals in that first period. Laurent Brossoit, I thought, was excellent, especially in the first. What did he end up with, 27, 28 saves? I mean, he had a very solid night last night. He's now 3-0.
Mm-hmm.
His numbers are just startling in the first three games. And all due respect to Laurent Brossoit, because he was a bit of an unknown coming into the season, right? We knew that he had some experience with the Edmonton Oilers, but
sure.
What, 25 games? Like 28 games, something like that?
Well,
not a lot.
He was in a battle, or the perception was that, you know, he may have had a bit of an advantage, but that he was in a battle with Eric Comrie for
right.
the backup goalie position, and then he obviously won it in training camp, and he's done nothing in his three starts with the Jets to say that he isn't anything other than an NHL backup goaltender.
He's been
right
phenomenal,
now.
And if you're giving grades based on 11 games, he for sure gets an A+, well, maybe even an A++. So I thought
you throw your backup goalie in and he's got 3 wins for you.
Right. And we thought Hellebuck might get the start, right? Because Hellebuck's from Michigan,
sure,
along with Connor and Kopp and Trouba. So we thought that maybe Hellebuck might even get both of these starts, right? Because you had the break between the two games in Finland.
Well, you got 4 days off after tonight.
Right.
You don't play again until Thursday in Finland.
Right. So my thinking was, if Hellebuck plays really well and you don't have a heavy workload, right? Mm-hmm. Like, 25, 30 shots, similar to what Detroit had last night, I thought, okay, then you play him back to back in Toronto. But, obviously Paul Maurice made the call and it was the right call. So big props to Lauren Brossoit for keeping the Jets in this one. Mm-hmm. Detroit could have had more than one goal, but that second period, getting back to that, the Jets draw 3 penalties. They had really good looks on the power play. Kyle Connor talked about it when he was asked about his goal in the power play. I thought, Patrick Laine was getting open. Blake Wheeler, I thought, was really controlling the power play like you expect. Blake Wheeler is one of the best passers in the league, especially on the power play. So I thought the power play looked really good. And you got the feeling in that second period, it was just a matter of time before the Jets were going to score. After they got that first goal, it was on the third period. Sure, Detroit made a push at the end. But I thought that the Jets were in control of this game from the puck drop in the second period till the end of the game.
Which is what they should do against the Detroit Red Wings opponent that is certainly nowhere in the same class as the Winnipeg Jets. The Red Wings are one of the worst teams in the league statistically to start this season, and that's where most people expected them to be.
This is my question, and we talked about it a little bit on the postgame show with Kevin O last night. What's their identity? Because this Red Wings team, Andreas Athanasiou is one of their best players. Dylan Larkin is one of their best players. Anthony Mantha was on the third line last night. He's got one goal all year.
He wasn't very good last night, or very noticeable last night.
Franz Nielsen is a shadow.
He's got
no goals and 5 assists. He's making $5.2 million a year.
Well, and he's in his mid-30s. It's a bad signing when he came over from the Islanders.
But old defense. We know Nicholas Cronwall. He's 37, but Jonathan Erickson, his better days are behind him.
Yeah.
Mike Green, obviously, that was his first game back, so you can't, pile up on Mike Green. He's a good defenseman, but they definitely missed him. It's not a very talented team. You've got a decent first line, and, I really like Darren Helm, obviously, from St. Andrews, Manitoba, but, you really miss Henrik Zetterberg.
Paul Edmonds now.
Well, exactly.
Yeah, but birthplace. Helm's off the sign. It's birthplace of Paul Edmonds.
You miss Zetterberg, and, Michael Rasmussen was scratched in favor of Jacob Delarose, who was in his first game. He was claimed off of waivers, so it's just a mishmash, and they're just not a good team. And, you mentioned, statistically, they're one of the worst teams. They've only got one win on the season in 10 games, right? So they just recently got their first win of the season over Florida. So it's a team, I think, that we expected not to be very good this year. It's just a team that doesn't seem to have a lot of intensity and a lot of urgency.
I'm surprised you say that. I thought that the Red Wings, they're not a very good team. There's no question about that. I thought they played a pretty good game for the Red Wings. The Jets.
Yeah, maybe in the first period.
Well, even at the late, towards the end of the third period when they were pressing for the tying goal, I thought that they looked dangerous. It wouldn't have shocked me if they were able to tie that game last night.
Yeah, but it's one thing to look dangerous in the third period, and it's another thing to look dangerous for 60 minutes.
Well, they're not a very
40
good,
minutes,
but
even.
They're not a very good team. We know that. The Jets didn't, the Jets get, credit for the win because they went on the road and they won a game. But if you're telling me that the Jets looked head and shoulders above the Red Wings for the entirety of the game, I would have to disagree. Detroit
took
the play.
Yeah, but it doesn't have to be for the entirety of the game. One period is all you need, and we've seen that for the Jets, right? And
well,
in that second period,
playing with fire, though.
If you like advanced stats,
I know 75% to about 25%.
Well, that's bad.
Yeah, but that's terrible. And you saw it in the game flow. And there's no reason why the Jets should lose 2 out of the 3 periods on the Corsi scoreboard, which is what they did to the Red Wings last night. The Red Wings won, quote unquote, the first and the third period. Now the third period was pretty close to even either way.
The Red Wings lost the 2 periods just because they had the better advanced stats there in the third. What are we talking about?
I know.
51%?
I know. It's a toss-up. It's not something you can really hang your hat on. I agree with that there. Nothing is coming easy to this Winnipeg Jets team right now. And when you play the Red Wings and you are a Stanley Cup favorite and the Red Wings are a bottom feeder, you would think it would have been maybe a bit easier for the Jets, but nothing is coming easy for this team. You see it.
True. Jimmy Howard is the only reason why this was a 2-1 game.
Right.
It could have easily been 5-1.
Well,
Jimmy
Howard was the best player on the ice for the Red Wings. I mean, he was certainly kept them in the game, especially in that second period. But you can see when you watch that game last night, as you think about the number of point blank opportunities that a guy like Mark Scheifele had where he misses the net, especially on the power play, where the Jets have, they have such a dangerous power play where, they always look to find Scheifele in that high slot area where he can rifle that one-timer on and off a stick in a blink of an eye. How many times did he miss the net? Three? Where oftentimes those are all going to go into the net, or a lot of those are going to be goals normally. You can just see how tight the Jets are right now, where until Kyle Connor was able to get that goal, the power play goal to tie it up, you could see the Jets were beginning to look to the sky. They were looking skyward every time Jimmy Howard would make a save, or they're gripping their sticks just even a little bit tighter than they have been almost all season long. Nothing is coming easy to this team as of yet. And the fact that they have a good record is certainly a testament to their ability to win when they haven't been playing at 100%. But you can still see them going through the struggles that they have been from the start of the year.
I don't agree with that completely because, you come into this game and you know that you want to get the win because you lost to the Leafs and then you have a game coming up the next night against Toronto and you don't have a very good first period. So what do? You come out in the second period and you have 21 shots on Jimmy Howard. To me, that's a confident team. And that's a team that could have easily, as you said, you could have easily had three or four goals. So you still haven't maybe seen a complete game like you saw against St. Louis or against LA. I like the game against Nashville minus the penalties, but I agree with you. We still haven't seen necessarily the A level of the Jets for the majority of the season, yet they still have 7 wins in 11 games.
And they get credit for having those 7 wins, certainly. But you're right. I agree with you. You haven't seen the A game. There's still so many unknowns and moving pieces on this team. Patrick Laine gets bumped down to the fourth line, which is something we're going to talk about next segment. But before we do, I want to hear from Paul Maurice. Last night, post-game, this is what Maurice had to say about the decision to flip Matthew Perreault and Patrick Laine.
One of the games that Lauren doesn't have as much work as he did in the prior two, but some pretty big stops.
Yeah, he had to be really good early and then good late, But he's been so solid for us. Again, a real competitive man in the net and fights through traffic and some bouncing pucks in front of the net. He stayed in on
him. What was the decision to flip-flop for Perreault?
Just watching the game.
Just watching the game, that's Paul Maurice's answer to Ken Weeb's question.
And Weber had to ask the question,
right?
Well,
sure. Everybody's watching the game, sees Patrick Laine get all the power play time, but gets nothing, after the first period at 5-on-5.
But that's what was so weird about it, Drew, because, Laine flips with Matty Perreault, right? So he goes down to the fourth line with Jack Roslovic and Brendan Lemieux, who both ended up around 6.5 minutes.
Yeah.
And then Patrick Laine still goes out there for the first power play every time in that third period, right?
Yep.
So I think they had, what did they have, 2 power plays in that third period? If I'm not mistaken, they had at least one.
In the third period, the Jets had 1 power play.
Right, so Laine still got his power play time, and he ended up with, I think it was 7.5 minutes of power play time, 17 minutes. So it's kind of funny that
7.5 minutes, 7:34 power play, 9:34 even strength.
Right, so I wouldn't expect Laine, by the way, to be on the fourth line for the game tonight against the Leafs. I don't see that happening. I think the message was sent.
Well, hold that thought, because I want to talk about Patrick Laine. I want to talk about his game last night. I want to talk about the Jets forward lines for tonight's game and then the trip to Finland, because things certainly are in a state of upheaval when it comes to the Jets forward lines. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Birchwood Nissan Infinity Winnipeg Jets game day on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
That one is a great opportunity to me as well. I've been working hard, and now finally get the chance with the big boys, and just try to keep up with those guys and push myself every shift.
That was Patrick Laine prior to Wednesday's game against the Toronto Maple Leafs, when he started that game playing with Blake Wheeler and Mark Scheifele. Last night he started the game not with those guys and ended the game playing on the fourth line, at least at 5-on-5, with Jack Roslovic and Brendan Lemieux. So something is certainly up with the Jets number 29. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy, always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. Ezzy, we were going to talk about it right at the, you started talking about it right before the break. Patrick Laine last night gets a lot of power play time, certainly maintains his spot at the number one, you know, Jets power play unit, but his 5-on-5 time plummets. He ends the game flipping and flopping with Matthew Perreault, ending up on the fourth line with Jack Roslovic and Brendan Lemieux. You know, he wasn't great last night by any stretch, especially 5-on-5. But I thought he was better than he was against Toronto, and I thought he was at times a little dangerous when he was still playing with his regular line mates. So I was a little, I found Paul Maurice's decision to be a little curious as they try and, you know, find out what is ailing Patrick Laine at 5-on-5 so far this season.
We've talked about it already this year. It's pretty remarkable that Laine hasn't scored at even strength yet this year. He's got the 3 goals, we know that. They're all on the power play, and I agree with you. I thought he looked very dangerous on the power play. Mm-hmm. I counted at least 2 shots. I think he ended up with 3 shots total. At least 2 of them were on the power play. I think all 3 of them could have been on the power play. And Kevin Owen and I last night during the game, during the second intermission, were trying to figure out what it was that really triggered, you know, Paul Maurice moving him down to the fourth line. And we couldn't really figure out
like one, an individual play.
And I certainly couldn't find one play, because the giveaway on Kasperi Kapanen's goal in the first period against Toronto,
mm-hmm.
I mean, that was obvious, right? I mean, he fails to get the puck out of the zone. It leads to Kapanen's goal.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the game against Toronto was maybe one of Laine's worst games of the year. Now, I don't think that...
Maybe one of his worst games as a professional.
Maybe, but yeah. When you're talking about Laine, you know, and his game at the macro level, I don't think it's as bad as some people think. Like, he's struggling right now at even strength, but he's also, you know, missing shots,
yeah.
And, you know, he's hit some posts, but I think you have to ask, is it Patrick Laine struggling or is it his line mates? Because I think we've definitely focused a lot on who he's playing with, right? Especially at center.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, Paul Stastny came in at the trade deadline.
And they were
and
great.
They clicked, right?
Yeah.
And we knew it was going to be one of Brian Little or Jack Roslovic. And then early on in the season, Paul Maurice, you know, let the media know, no, it's Brian Little, and it has been Brian Little on that second line. Now, you've seen Laine go up to the first line. And then you've seen him go back down to the second line, and then Paul Maurice moved Nikolai Ehlers up to the top line. And I thought Ehlers was really good yesterday.
Yes.
And I would expect Ehlers to stay up on the top line.
With Scheifele and Wheeler.
Right. So, to me, it's not necessarily his line mates, because, you know, I'm not as concerned with the goals. I'm more concerned about, you know, the way he's playing away from the puck. And I think at times he is too passive.
Yes.
And I think if you look back at the game, and obviously I haven't, you know, looked over the game and reviewed the game play by play. But I imagine it was something he did in his own zone, probably back checking or maybe not clearing the puck. I don't think it's something he did on the power play, because Paul Maurice put him out there for 7.5 minutes. And there was one shift that Laine was out there, I think close to 1.5 minutes. Buff was out there for almost a minute.
The first
40
power
seconds.
Play unit had good control. They
that
had
was
the
in
puck.
The second period.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I agree that I don't think it was any, you know, if a guy like Patrick Laine is all of a sudden struggling to score, the coach isn't going to bench him for that reason. You get benched or you get.
He's not
going to
be a healthy scratch.
No,
you don't healthy scratch
no.
A second overall pick.
But you don't get shuffled from the second line to the fourth line unless it's something that the coach is seeing in your own zone.
Right.
And I agree that this year Patrick Laine has been soft on pucks. He has not been decisive with his actions. He's been a little lackadaisical.
Yep.
Some things you can say, by the way, for the entire Jets team at different points in time so far this season. So Laine's not the only one. But there's something about it right now that he's a player who you can see is not playing with any confidence. There's no confidence in his game. There's no decisiveness in his game. There's no speed in his game. And I'm not talking about speed as in just straight away how fast you can get from point A to point B, because we know that Patrick Laine is not the world's greatest skater. He's never going to be the world's greatest skater. He's just so unsure of what he needs to do, particularly in his own zone, that it's leading to turnovers. And it's leading to the opposition getting on him so quickly that he's not able to make decisive decisions.
Right. And this doesn't mean that, you know, he isn't still one of the best goal scorers in the NHL, but the fact is...
They need to get him going 5-on-5, though.
Right, and when you're not scoring at 5-on-5, especially, and you might still be contributing on the power play, and he was contributing on the power play yesterday. I realize he didn't score a goal, but he had some really good shots. Jimmy Howard made a really good save coming, you know, left to right.
He's a threat on every power play opportunity.
Threat, and you know that Wheeler's going to look for him and Scheifele, but back to, you know, his play in the defensive zone, Drew, I agree with you. And, you know, it's not just us that are noticing this.
Everybody's
obviously
noticing
Paul Maurice noticed it because, you know, you move line A up to the first line, and then you move his line mates on the second line. I mean, you only have really one option. You move him down to the third or fourth line. And obviously, you know, that third line, the TLC line, or whatever you want to call the third line. Some people call it the fourth line. But based on ice time, the TLC line is your third line. That's a checking line. So you're not going to put line A on that line with Lowry and Tanev. Just doesn't make sense.
It does. You're absolutely right. But right now, I don't know.
They're trying to get him going. That's what Paul Maurice is trying to do.
I don't know who you play him with at this point in time to get him going.
I think, you know, considering that Ehlers has been good on that top line, you got to put him back on that second line. You got to see Connor Little in line A. And I agree with you. I think I've said this to you, Drew, many times off air. Mm-hmm. I think from the start of the preseason, Kyle Connor has been the Jets' best forward.
And I think
he's the guy that can get Patrick Laine going because we know it's not Nikolai Ehlers. He wasn't putting up big numbers on that second line, and we know that he's playing well with Scheifele and Wheeler. So I think you got to stick with Laine, Little, and Connor.
I agree. At least tonight against the Toronto Maple Leafs, I would expect that is going to be the Jets' second line, barring something that would certainly come as a surprise to me. And of course, the Jets won't skate this morning because they played last night, so we really won't have an idea of their roster and of their forward group until the pregame skate, you know, right around 5:30, 5:45 this afternoon. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290 as part of Birchwood Nissan Infinity Winnipeg Jets game day. We're talking about Patrick Laine and his recent struggles, especially at 5-on-5. You know, as you look at the ice time last night, and we talked about Laine's ice time and heavily influenced by his power play time, you look at a guy like Brendan Lemieux. Last night, he plays 6 minutes and 50 seconds. Night in Toronto, it was four and a half minutes. Against St. Louis, it was under 2 minutes. You know, he's maxed out at 8:53 in his last 6 games for the Winnipeg Jets.
Right, and last night, you know, one of the reasons why he didn't play a lot is because of all the power plays, right? 5 power plays for the Jets, that's part of it. But still, I think even if the Jets only had, let's say, 2 or 3 power plays, he probably only would have played 8 minutes or something like that.
He's not playing enough time. Jack Roslovic's not playing enough time.
I think you might see Nick Batan tonight.
That's what I was going to say. You know, at this point,
or if you don't see him tonight, you might see him in Finland.
What does, because Brendan Lemieux is the kind of guy, from my perspective, is the kind of guy who you can bring into the lineup and bring out to the lineup, and his game's not going to change very much. You know what Brendan Lemieux brings to the table. You don't yet know what Nick Petan is going to do in this year. He had a great year in the AHL. Obviously, this season has gotten off to, he had the tragedy with his family, so that has really put a hiccup into his entire planning and preparation for this season. So I would put Nick Petan into the lineup. And I don't know necessarily that you play Patan with Laine, but at this point in time, you need to figure out a way to get some of that offense going. You need to find somebody who might have some chemistry with Patrick Laine. So why not put Patan into the lineup and Jack Roslovic?
That's a good point, Drew, because it's not just Brendan Lemieux. Whether or not Brendan Lemieux plays tonight, that fourth line,
I think we'd
all agree you'd like to see them play a little bit more. I don't think we want to see that line play 15 minutes a game, but you want to see them play somewhere between 8 and 15 minutes.
They need to get into double digits. You can't you can't run just 3 lines on a fourth line that only plays, you know, 6.5 minutes a game.
Especially in a game in which it was tied or you were leading for the majority of the game. So the game against Toronto, for example, I mean, it's understandable why Paul Maurice wasn't playing that fourth line a lot because you're chasing the game, you're trying to get a goal. Yeah. I mean, you know most likely that your best chances of generating offense are from your top 3 lines, so I get that. But in a game like last night against the worst team in the league,
if you can't get Jack Roslovic more than 6.5 minutes of ice time, and if you can't get Brendan Lemieux, you know, at least into, you know, close to 8 or 9 or, you know, even 10 minutes of ice time, something is just not right with that line
and
with those players.
And I don't think Lemieux's played bad at all. You haven't seen him play enough.
That's right. It's just not reasonable for this to continue all season long. I understand why Paul Maurice is a little hesitant to put them out there, but you can give them sheltered minutes.
Well, and we also have to throw in that, you know, we expect Christian Vesalainen to be recalled
to go to Finland,
and there's a good chance that he plays in those two games in Finland, right? So that's so then Brendan Lemieux could be the odd man out.
I mean, there's the open roster spot. So, you know, Vesalainen and we expect Erik Komri are both going to go on the trip to Finland because the NHL allows teams to carry a third goaltender they go overseas. Yeah.
And, you know, for those who were wondering kind of why, I mean, you can't have an emergency backup in Finland. So if Connor Hellebuyck goes down in the first game, either you bring up Erik Komri or Dustin Byfuglien goes in.
Whatever it might be, but the Jets need to do something about their forward lines right now. They need to find a way to get Patrick Laine going, and they need to find a way to get Jack Roslovic more ice time than 6.5 minutes because he can't. I mean, the skill is there. You've seen it in flashes. But
what does
you
it
need
do
more.
For his development, though?
Nothing. This is all that's hindering his development.
Right.
You need him to get ice time on a consistent basis, and there are going to be certainly some games where it just doesn't work. But if you can't get Roslovic more than, you know, 7 minutes of ice time against the worst team in the league, who's he getting that ice time against? And I don't know the answer to that, and that's something that Paul Maurice needs to find out to get the forward lines going and to get some chemistry going. When we come back, we're going to head out to Toronto. Ted Wyman of the Winnipeg Sun is on location ahead of tonight's Jets-Leafs rematch. We talk to Teddy up next. You're listening to Birchwood Nissan Infinity Winnipeg Jets Game Day as part of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour, Saturday morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show as part of Birchwood Nissan Infinity Winnipeg Jets game day here on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mandel and Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From the Winnipeg Sun, he joins us from Toronto, where the Jets and the Leafs will have their rematch later on this evening. Teddy Wyman joins us now. Ted, good morning. How are you, buddy?
Good morning, Drew. I'm doing very well. Just arrived here at Scotiabank Arena, where it's Coaches Day. So there's a lot of fans in the stands, minor hockey coaches and players, and quite an atmosphere for a pregame skate.
Oh, there you go. That'll be fun. Has the fog lifted from last night's Bombers game over the Stampeders?
Yeah, I managed to get through that one. That was quite a game also. I mean, I know you guys are a hockey show, but that was quite a show of football by the Blue Bombers. And obviously the fog made it all the more interesting. Very Halloween-y evening at the old stadium, I would say.
Ted, I kept just thinking of former Argos quarterback Ricky Foggy and wondering if he was watching that game.
Well, and Kevin Fogg, of course, of the Bombers, was also involved in that game. So yep. There you go. And I mean, I know there were some people joking about some of the older guys in the press box, if any of them were actually at the Fog Bowl in 1962, and asking how this one compared.
that's a pretty good line. I like that.
Drew was in the stands watching.
Yeah, thank you, Ezzy. Ted, obviously we brought you on to talk a little bit about the Bombers, but also about the Winnipeg Jets. They were victorious last night in Detroit, as you well know, and then they have the rematch tonight against the Leafs in Toronto before heading overseas to Finland. Last day when we were talking about Patrick Laine, and Patrick Laine ends up on the fourth line for even strength last night, playing with Jack Roslovic and Brendan Lemieux. You wrote about Laine earlier this week. What do the Jets have to do to get Patrick Laine going at 5-on-5 play? And from my perspective, it's certainly playing with Jack Roslovic and Brendan Lemieux doesn't seem like the answer to me.
No, it sure doesn't. That didn't seem like, I mean, that seems like a wake-up call kind of move from Paul Maurice, more than a get-him-going kind of move, because, you know, you're not going to get better chances playing with those guys than you are with Little and Ehlers and guys like Wheeler and Scheifele. And that Wheeler and Scheifele experiment lasted about 30 seconds, didn't it? I mean, That was kind of a weird one, too. It's kind of strange to me how much they've moved him. And that suggests that those of us who are looking at this and saying, gee, he's not playing very well, and it's not just his numbers, it's not just the fact that he hasn't scored at 5-on-5, it's that he just isn't doing a lot of the little things very well. And therefore, you know, I think it's pretty obvious that Paul Maurice sees that too, and he's making these moves. So, I got to think you just got to be patient, because Patrick Laine is still only 20 years old. He's had slow starts before. He didn't have the fastest start in the league last year either, and he still scored 44 goals. So, you know, you're going to get out of Patrick Laine what you pay for, because this is, you expect him to score goals, and he's going to score them. But it's going to maybe take a little bit of patience because there's something just a little off with him right now.
Ted, we can't talk about last night's game and not talk about Lauren Brossoit. He makes 27 saves, including 13 saves in that first period. Many of them were spectacular saves. In three games now, his numbers are just incredible. He's got three wins, 9.57 save percentage, and a 1.67 goals against average. The question for you is, has he not just exceeded everyone's expectations for him at the start of the season?
I don't think there's anyone in the world, including Laurent Brossoit, who thought that he was going to have a start like that with the Winnipeg Jets. He's been outstanding. Without question, maybe one of the best players on the team so far in his three games. You know, I mean, honestly, like when they signed him, most people in Winnipeg had no idea what they were getting. As a guy that couldn't crack Edmonton, and Edmonton hadn't made the playoffs. I mean, that didn't scream as a signing that was bringing in a great player, but he did have a fantastic junior career and had some promise, and the Jets took a shot at him at a low price and wanted to get some decent games out of him to back up Connor Hellebuyck. Not even that many, most likely. You know, you could look at Hellebuyck and say, that's a good chance he's going to play 60 games. But to get that kind of a start out of Laurent Brossoit, I think is absolutely a great bonus for the Jets. And he doesn't show any signs that he might be slowing down. He's just a fantastic save percentage, has kept the puck out of his net regularly, and he's got three wins. You might say that's almost worth the price already.
Ted Wyman, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're discussing the Winnipeg Jets ahead of tonight's Jets-Leafs rematch in Toronto. Ted, Ezzy and I were talking about time on ice and how Jack Roslovic and Brendan Lemieux really aren't getting enough of it. You know, under 10 minutes for the most part each and every game this season. Lemieux last night at 6:50 time on ice and Roslovic at 6:38. How long can this keep going for? Doesn't Paul Maurice, isn't it incumbent on him to get these guys, particularly Jack Roslovic, a guy who's got such dynamic offensive talent, more of an opportunity to display that talent?
Well, I'm sure he'd like to, but when you've got as much special teams play as has been going on in many of the games, and last night it was more the Jets who had all the power play opportunities, where are they getting in on that? You know, I mean, Roslovic just has some second team power play time, but that doesn't get you too much. But if that power play unit's out there or the penalty killing units out there, as often as they are, it's, you know, there's not going to be that much of a chance to play the fourth line. And also, there's been, strangely, even though the Jets are 7-3-1, there's been quite a few games where they were chasing the game at time, and then that's not really the ideal time for the fourth line to be out there either. So I don't think the circumstances have played well for the opportunity for the fourth line to get more minutes. I'm sure Paul Maurice wants to get them more. I mean, I think when you look late in the season or into the playoffs, it's the teams that are getting their fourth line 10 minutes a game and consistently and making sure that they take some of that heavy load off the top line that are doing well. So by the end of the season, I'm sure that's where they want to be. But right now, it's just hasn't presented itself with that opportunity.
Teddy, the Jets are going to be allowed to call up one player and one goaltender from the Manitoba Moose for this upcoming road trip to Finland, and we expect it to be Erik Komrie and Christian Vesalainen. Do you think Christian Vesalainen and what he's able to do in Finland will have any impact on whether he stays in Finland or he comes back and plays with either the Jets or the Moose?
Yeah, it'd sure be convenient if he is staying in Finland for him to just stay there after, wouldn't it? But I think his best place right now is with the Moose. I think he's learning the North American game. I think he's a guy that needs that. You can play in the even in the men's league in Finland, but it's not quite the same. And the AHL is a great learning ground for it. It's happened for many a good hockey player. Some of the better Jets players came up through there, like Hellebuyck and Morrissey. I think Kyle Connor as well and Jack Roslovic. Like, you've got to see that that's something that happens to a lot of real good prospects in the National Hockey League. And I think that that would definitely be the best spot for him. So, I think they should be hoping that what happens is if he does go to Finland, that he comes back with them and continues his development at that AHL level.
Ted Wyman, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're discussing the Jets and the Leafs that happens tonight in Toronto. That's where Ted joins us from. You know, Ted, do you think the Jets are you know, have this game sort of as a revenge game to some extent, given the poor performance that they had on home ice on Wednesday night? Do you think that they're sort of taking extra motivation as maybe getting to return the favor to disappoint the Leafs' hometown fans, just like the Jets were disappointed by the Leafs on Wednesday?
I'd normally say I wouldn't expect too many of the guys to say that, but everybody acknowledged that that game on Wednesday was a pretty special game because you know who the opponent is and you want to go against the best, possibly the best team from the other conference. And the Leafs said the same, so I'm pretty sure everybody will be equally jacked up about this one. And, of course, the Jets would like to get back at them a little bit, but they're going to have to play a lot better. They didn't play well in the first part of that game. And that allowed Toronto to build up a 3-0 lead, and then the Jets were chasing, and they came close, but, you know, that's not good enough. I thought the Leafs were the faster team for that game for the most part, even though I think the shots ended up pretty close to even, and the shot attempts ended up pretty close to even, but, you know, that was mostly due to a pretty lopsided third period for the Jets. They can't afford to keep waiting until the third period to pour it on, and, you know, they're not scoring much at all in the first period. That would be something that would help them a lot. I think you can go back to the playoffs last season. How did the Jets do when the other team scored the first goal in the playoffs?
Pretty poorly.
Against Las Vegas. They didn't win, right?
Mm-hmm.
It just didn't happen. So I think this team is a much better front-running team, the Edmonton game notwithstanding. And, you know, that's, you know, I think that's really something that you might see a different team, a little bit of a different style, a little bit more what you expect from them, if they can get that early lead and play a little bit of a different game.
Ted, you mentioned earlier there's no game day skate today because the Jets played last night, but when you talk about that fourth line, and Drew asked you about the fourth line earlier, and, you know, Brendan Lemieux's not playing that much, you know, if you could look into your crystal ball, do you think there's a chance that we might see Nick Batan? And if we don't see Nick Batan tonight, do you think there's any chance that we see him in those two games in Finland?
Yeah, I think it's coming pretty soon. That certainly sounded like what Paul Maurice was saying. He said that Patan is pretty close to ready, and they're going to want to get him in there. And I have to say, why not give the guy a chance? I don't know where his head is at. Obviously, he's been through a terrible tragedy at home and has been home dealing with that. But, you know, he's a pro, and he wants his chance. And this was his year, right, guys? I mean, this is it for him. He's got to make a mark now, or else he's probably not going to be a part of this organization anymore. And they're giving him a chance. They've got him up on the roster. And they don't want to put him on waivers. They don't want to lose him. So here's your chance. And if they can get him in there, get him a chance, I don't see why you wouldn't. I think they like the grit that Brendan Lemieux brings, no doubt. But it hasn't really been a huge impact on the game so far. So I would expect to see that to happen reasonably soon. And we'll see what Mr. Patan can do with it.
Last question for you, Ted. We started the interview with the Bombers. We might as well end with it. Where would you rank the Bombers among the four playoff-bound teams from the Western Division?
Yeah, that's a real good question. That's that's a tough one. Because honestly, right now, who's better, Winnipeg or Calgary? I mean, I think the Bombers are better than Saskatchewan. I really do. I think Saskatchewan's got a better record, but I think the Bombers right now are a better team. BC has really come on strong, so they're right there. It's neck and neck, guys. Like, I think that's too much of a question to ask to try to rank these guys, because who knows? It could go any way. Like, there's still a bunch of permutations and combinations of how these playoffs could play out, who's going to play who. But honestly, who's going to win? That's way too much for any mind to figure out. Like, it's really going to be something. And I do think this Bomber team has a chance to do something in the playoffs because they've put it all together. They've got offense and defense really firing.
Well, the first step was making the playoffs, and they qualified with last night's victory over the Stampeders. The Jets will look to make it two wins in a row as well tonight in Toronto. Ted Wyman joins us from Toronto. Ted, appreciate your time this morning.
Always a great pleasure, guys. Have a good day.
Thanks, Ted. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Birchwood Nissan Infinity Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Good job defensively by Morrissey. Kasperi, Kapanen backhander save made. Rebound. Laine trying to clear. Kapanen scores! In the corner, Lowry takes the loose puck for Kopp. Kopp trying to chop it up, blocked at the line. Sent down in front of the net, score! Shot from the right point by Levo, deflected by Tyler Ennis. Played up at center and banked off for Nazem Kadri. Kadri in on goal, scores! And Toronto with the 3-0 lead.
Giving up three consecutive goals on home ice is not a recipe for success. The Jets found that out the hard way, I suppose you could say. On Wednesday night, when they were down 3-0 to the Leafs, they battled back to make it 3-2, but the Leafs, of course, got the 4-2 goal, which was the backbreaker in winning that all-Canadian matchup on Wednesday night. The rematch, of course, goes tonight back in Toronto, a game you can hear live on TSN Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel and Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. This segment brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. So Wednesday night obviously didn't go the way the hometown team wanted it to go, Ezzy. The Leafs were the better of the two teams by a long shot. They took the play to the Winnipeg Jets. The Winnipeg Jets were on their heels for the majority of the game. The only time the Jets really showed a pulse is when they got those two quick third period goals to make it 3-2 before the Leafs made it 4-2. And, you know, the Leafs, I think, proved that on Wednesday night, at least right now at this point in the season, they're the better of these two upper echelon Canadian teams.
Right, and the Jets have a great opportunity tonight, you know, to even the season series, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, this Leafs team, you can say whatever you want about that group of defensemen. And I was actually pretty impressed by Igor Ozaganov. And this is a guy, 25-year-old undrafted player, who they brought over from the Continental Hockey League. And he's on that third pair. And, you know, Travis Dermott has also been on that third pair as well. But I actually thought Nikita Zaitsev looked really good. And then obviously, you know, Morgan Riley's having a great start to the year. I mean, he's the best defenseman on the Leafs. Even Ron Hainsey, I thought, looked pretty good. The point is, you know, they're awesome up the middle. And we know who the guys are. Auston Matthews, John Tavares, Nazem Kadri, and Freddie Gauthier.
Mm-hmm.
And that fourth line was really impressive to me. You've got Josh Levo, and then you've also got Tyler Ennis, who got the goal. We played the clip. So, I mean, this is a very deep group of forwards. They have four good scoring lines. And, you know, Tyler Ennis is a guy, if you remember, you know, he used to be a first-line guy on Buffalo. And he really didn't play that well in Minnesota. He was also a healthy scratch. Anyways, the point is,
bought out of his contract. That's how he ended up in Toronto.
Right. And it's not just, you know, how strong they are up the middle. I mean, Patrick Marleau is 39 years old. He can fly still. I mean, this is a very good team, a mixture of good young forwards and good veteran forwards. You know, mentioned Marleau, guy like Nazem Kadri. I'm always impressed by Connor Brown as well. He's a guy that, you know, he goes into the corners, he plays a physical game, very good forward. So there's a lot of depth, and Freddie Anderson's a very solid goalie. And I thought that the Jets didn't dictate speed enough in this game. I thought the Leafs really dictated the pace of the game, and they really had way too much room in the neutral zone, and they were generating too much speed. And you hear these hockey cliches a lot, Drew, but I really thought that was the difference in the game. And obviously, you know, special teams are always going to be a factor. And, you know, in Toronto, the Jets are going to have to stay out of the penalty box. And then, you know, if you're able to chip in one or two power play goals, that could be the difference. I do think this is going to be another close game. And, you know, the Jets have to feel confident winning that 2-1 game last night. But, you know, the Leafs have been sitting there practicing all week since the Wednesday game, right? The Leafs have not played since Wednesday.
They only played really one game in the last 7 days, where the Jets have had four games in the last 7 days, five games.
Right.
It was four in the last six, and I think five in the last seven for the Winnipeg Jets.
Right. And, you know, you could say that maybe that doesn't mean anything, but they're going to be well rested, and the Jets just flew into Toronto last night. And sure, it's a short flight, but the point is, you know, you have to get off to a good start.
Ted
Wyman talked about that.
Yeah.
You know, Detroit scored the first goal. I think the Jets have allowed the first goal in four straight games. I might be mistaken about that, but I think it's four straight.
That sounds right.
And against a team like Toronto,
the last time the Jets scored first, Lowry would have had those two goals against Edmonton, if I'm not mistaken.
And Drew, the Red Wings only score a couple goals a game on average. I mean, they're one of the worst teams in the league offensively. So against Detroit, I wasn't that concerned. I really wasn't watching the game. And I'm not saying that I knew the Jets were going to win.
That's ironic, considering you're doing pre and post.
Well, I'm just saying, I wasn't worried. I thought, especially with the way they came out early in the second period, drawing all of those penalties, you kind of knew that the Jets were going to tie it up and eventually take the lead. And I'm quite frankly surprised they didn't score more goals. I think Jimmy Howard, I mentioned. But the point is, you get down early to the Leafs. You're in the second game of a back-to-back. You might already be thinking a little bit ahead to Finland. So you got to get off to a really good start here. The Leafs are a team, they're averaging 4 goals a game.
Yeah. It's the speed of the Leafs. And for whatever reason, I mean, the Jets are not a slow team by any stretch of the imagination. The Leafs are a fast team, and the Jets are a fast team. But the Jets have not played with that speed consistently this season.
And you don't have last change. And I do think that Ben Chiarot and Dustin Byfuglien, when they went up against the John Tavares line, I think they really struggled.
Yeah, the Jets, I think, as a whole struggled to match the Leafs' speed. I think the Jets, for whatever reason, the decision-making when you're playing a team like the Leafs has to be almost immediate. You don't have a second to think because they're on you so quickly. The forecheck is so aggressive. The speed, they take away all your space and your time so well and so quickly. And I think the Jets had a lot of trouble with that on Wednesday night. And it's going to be more of the same unless the Jets are able to flip that switch and play with the speed for, you know, 60 minutes, as the cliche goes, because they haven't done that this year. For the most part this year, the Jets have been coasting, and then when they need to get it going, they get it going. You saw it last night. They coasted through that first period. The Red Wings took the game to them for that first period. Then the second period started, and the Jets flipped the switch, and they went after them. And they controlled the pace of the play after that. You saw that on Monday night against the Blues. The Blues were the better of the two teams for the first 40 minutes of that game or whatever. The Jets flipped the switch in the third period, and the Blues had no response. Well, the Blues and the Red Wings are not great hockey teams right now. The Toronto Maple Leafs right now are a very good hockey team, and the Jets have to be able to match the Leafs' speed and almost intensity from the puck drop, and that's something the Jets have had trouble with all season long, especially, as you mentioned, Ezzie, they haven't scored first in the last 4 games. First goal tonight on the road in Toronto is going to be a big one, because if you don't get that, and if the Leafs are able to dictate the pace of the play and control the play like they did on Wednesday night for a bulk of the time, the Jets are going to be in trouble again.
Yeah, I agree, and one of the key matchups has to be, you know, the TLC line. If they're matched up, and I would expect them to be matched up against Austin Matthews' line,
mm-hmm.
and then you probably have the Scheifele line against the Tavares line, and we saw that on Wednesday night, but that's going to be a huge matchup, because even though Austin Matthews didn't have any points in that game on Wednesday, I thought he looked excellent, and I thought Marlowe, Matthews, and Kapanen as a line looked excellent.
I agree. And, you know, it's sort of ironic that on Wednesday night, it wasn't the Leafs' big guns that did in the Winnipeg Jets. It was their depth scoring.
Yep.
That was the big difference in the game, is that, you know, you get Kasperi Kapanen who gets that unassisted goal.
Well, they actually got a goal from each line.
Right. Tyler Ennis, Nazem yep. Kadri gets his first of the season. Yep. I mean, Tavares ends up making it 4-2. But truthfully, I mean, it wasn't that. I don't think Tavares was, you know, peak John Tavares on Wednesday night by any stretch of the imagination. I've seen him play much better than he did on Wednesday night, which just goes to show you how dangerous the Leafs are.
That's a very fast line.
Yeah, well, they're fast top
to bottom. The Hyman Tavares Marner line I'm talking about.
Yeah.
I mean, the Marlowe Matthews Kapanen line, that's not a slow line, but I thought that Tavares line looked really strong.
You know, and people pointed to the fact that the Leafs
defense, the whole team looks strong. I mean, the Leafs are good, and I'm not a Leafs fan.
No.
But you got to give credit where credit's due. I mean, this is a good team. I'm not saying they're going to win the cup, but yeah, they were the better team. It wasn't one of those games where, you know, the Jets, you know, one mistake led to. I mean, the Leafs could have had 5 or 6 goals in that game.
You know, I poo-pooed the Leafs, you know, chances earlier in the year. Combination of reasons being, one, I mean, who wants to cheer for the Leafs or really give them any credit? And two, I thought their defense was going to be an Achilles heel for them. And their defense,
well, it could be in the playoffs.
It could be in the playoffs. But the defense right now, it's not great. But when you have so much offensive firepower, there's really truthfully something to the old adage that you don't need a great defense because the puck is being kept in the opposition's zone so much because of your incredible offense.
It's kind of similar to the way Washington was.
I was going
to
say Pittsburgh.
For all of those years. But then Washington, you know, then put together their defense. And, you know, Matt Niskanen was brought in. Brooks Orpik was brought in. Dmitry Orlov, he developed as a defenseman.
I was going to say Pittsburgh. When Pittsburgh won their most recent cups, the defense wasn't outstanding. Remember, they won a couple of those cups, if I'm not mistaken, without Chris Letang in the lineup because he would have been banged up. And Chris Letang was their best defenseman. But they had such great offensive firepower that they just really needed their defense to make that first pass, get it out of their zone, skate with it, and they were going to be okay at that point in time. The Leafs can skate on the back end. I mean, you know, for all of the criticism that Ron Hainsey draws or drew when he was a member of the Winnipeg Jets, he can still skate and he can still make a decent first pass. Jake Gardner certainly gives up a lot in his defensive zone, but he can skate and he can make a first pass. And Freddie Anderson never gets the credit I think that he deserves as being one of the, you know, certainly the top half of goaltenders in the NHL. And so when you add all those elements together, it's a very big challenge for the Winnipeg Jets. It's a very big challenge for any team to go into Toronto and play well against the Leafs.
And by the way, Drew, it looks like Travis Dermott is most likely not going to play. So it looks like Martin Marinson will be on that third pair again.
Well, you wonder if the Jets can expose that. Martin Marinson is, you know, he's not a great defenseman, so you wonder if that third pairing it will be an opportunity for the Jets to take advantage. But again, they don't get last change on home, you know, being the away team, so the Leafs will probably try and give those guys some sheltered minutes. It'll be an interesting game. The Jets looking for revenge, quote-unquote, against the Leafs in Toronto tonight after the disappointing effort on Wednesday night. The game will be heard here on TSN Radio 1290 starting at 6 o'clock as part of Birchwood Nissan Infinity Winnipeg Jets game day. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Marty Biron, talk a little bit about the goaltending equipment issue, talk about goaltenders around the NHL. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. We're part of Birchwood Nissan Infinity Winnipeg Jets game day. The Jets and the Leafs later tonight. 6 o'clock puck drop here on TSN Radio 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
He's a Buffalo Sabres analyst. He also does work for TSN. He's our good friend, Marty Biron. Marty, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning to you guys. How are things in Winnipeg?
Things are very well here in Winnipeg. How are things in upstate?
It's foggy, Marty. It's very foggy. I don't know if you saw the highlights of the Bombers game last night, but
I did see some of the highlights. I saw the 50-yard bomb for a touchdown that was thrown in there, and that was pretty impressive just to even locate the ball as it's, like, disappearing into the fog. So, yeah, here in Buffalo, it's good. I mean, the Sabres are doing great and the fans are enjoying it, but the Bills are gearing up for a Monday night football tilt against the New England Patriots. So we may be in a different state of mind on Tuesday morning.
It's hard to get it's hard to expect much when the Bills and the Patriots do battle, but you never know. Stranger things have happened. That's certainly the case. You know, Marty, you mentioned the Sabres. They're off to a, you know, quite a decent start this season. 6-4 in their first 10 games. You know, they've gotten some pretty okay goaltending from Carter Hutton, but Linus Allmark has been great in his two games so far. What's been the secret of success so far for the Sabres early on this season?
Well, I'll tell you that they've got good goaltending from Carter Hutton as well, because, you know, he had a couple of losses out west and, you know, Vegas and San Jose, but I think the teams totally forgot to show up to those two games. And it's been the problem for the Sabres is they've played really well in six games and then won, and they played really bad in four and they've lost. So finding some consistency, finding a middle ground right now is what I think the Sabres are trying to do. And I think they did that the last couple of games by going down in games. They were down 2-0 to the Anaheim Ducks. They were down by one goal three times to the Montreal Canadiens, and we were able to battle back. So I think there's a different feeling around the Buffalo Sabres where if you were down 2-0 to any team last season or even 2 years ago, this team was folding. It was like, okay, let's play the next 35 minutes and let's go home and there's always tomorrow. And I don't think that this team is doing that now. I think the Sabres and Phil Housley is looking at different combination, looking at different line, de-pairing, trying to make it work. And because he has the depth to be able to switch people in and out, it's worked to their advantage right now.
You know, Marty, sticking with the Sabres, and then we want to ask you about some goaltenders, if you're okay with that. You know, Jack Eichel, This is the first year of his long-term contract, and he was named captain, and he's off to a good start, but we know that Jack Eichel's got the offensive ability. In his first 3 years in the NHL, he's been close to a point-a-game player the last couple of years at least, but have you seen a different player in Eichel now that he's been named captain and that contract has kicked in, and he's ready to elevate his game and now take on more of a leadership role and get this team into the playoffs, something they haven't done in a long time?
The one difference that I'm seeing of Jack, especially over the last 3-4 games, is that he's not just a rush player anymore. We know that Jack Eichel gets the puck in the neutral zone, and he's that long, slow, steady stride that generates a lot of power through the neutral zone. And then over the last few years, he would always get a lot of his points either on the rush or on the power play. But when they added Jeff Skinner to his line right before the L.A. game last week, they really changed the way that they were playing. So they were much more of a, I'm going to cycle the puck in the corner. I'm going to hang on to pucks in the offensive zone. Jack Eichel this year, I believe, is in the top five or offensive zone possession time in the National Hockey League. So there's not too many players in the league that carries the puck, that hangs on to the puck as much as he does in the offensive zone. And I think that's the difference now, is he's trying to establish himself as a, you know, he has the skill, you know, he has the speed, but also this new phase to him is he'll grind it. He'll hang on to pucks. He'll work you, you know, it's like a boxer that works the jab slowly but surely, right? He's not looking for the uppercut. He's not looking for the big hook. It's just jabbing at the defense, at the other team. And then the room starts to open up for him.
Marty Biron is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You know Marty, of course, as an analyst on the MSG Network, as well as his work with TSN. Marty, a lot of maybe consternation in the goaltenders union as of late, with some goalies saying that the new goaltender equipment is not doing a good enough job, while other goalies are saying it's fine with them. What are you hearing, you know, from your goaltender friends with regard to the new equipment, and where do you think the situation goes from here?
I've talked to many of them, and, you know, I haven't gotten the, this is completely terrible take by, anyway, face-to-face. I haven't gotten that take by from any of the goalies that I've talked to. Yeah, some of them are saying they're a little bit more restricted in the arm area. It's a little tighter. Obviously, they've got a few more bruises here and there. But at the same time, I think the ones that I've tried different chest and arm protector, the ones that I've really done the research over the summer and were able to get a sample earlier in the summer as opposed to later in the year, are the ones that have found what works for them. And unfortunately, they had some issues with getting the new legal chest and arm protector to a lot of the goaltenders. So when camp started, some of them had just been wearing them a couple of days, weren't really able to try different companies or different samples of them. So they're still in that tryout phase right now. But, you know, when I played, to be honest with you, I never had a big chest and arm protector. Mine was always kind of an older piece. The pucks did hurt once in a while. I actually broke my collarbone. It wasn't because of the chest and arm protectors, because I didn't wear a neck guard. I didn't like a lot of equipment on top of me. So I know the feeling when you get stung by a puck in practice or in a game. So that's going to happen. But I go back to look into the way the goalies were in the 70s and 80s, and I say we're way better now than we ever were as a goaltender, way better protected than we ever were. So I think it should be fine. Yes, there's a little bit more goals that are going through the body of the goaltender, and I think that's what the league wanted to do, so that it wasn't just Michelin Man out in net. You had to react and you had to get yourself in front of pucks if you wanted to stop them.
Marty, I wanted to ask you about Lauren Brossoit, and I'm not sure if you caught any of that game last night between the Jets and the Red Wings, or you caught any of the highlights, but Lauren Brossoit picked up the win for the Jets, and he had 27 saves in the win. He's now 3-0 on the season, and his numbers are fantastic, 1.67 goals against average, and his save percentage is around .955 right now. And I wanted to ask you specifically, because you've been a number one goaltender for many years with the Buffalo Sabres and then the Philadelphia Flyers, and then you've also played that backup role with the New York Rangers and Henrik Lundqvist. And my question for you was, how important is it for a number one goaltender like Connor Hellebuyck to be pushed by a goaltender like Lauren Brossoit? He's only played three games this year, but he's been excellent, and they also have that close relationship that goes back from their time training together.
Yeah, there's many different relationships between starter and backup. There's a relationship where the backup is an up-and-coming guy that wants to take over the number one job, and that could get a little dicey at times, so you have to manage that really well. But I think the situation in Winnipeg between Hellebuyck and Brossoit is that, you know there's a clear number one, a clear number two, and they can work together, and they don't have to be in competition with one another. I think that that's going to benefit both of them. I did see the game last night against the Detroit Red Wings, and as a backup goaltender, it is so hard when you are trusted to play a team that is not doing well, that is last in the league, the Detroit Red Wings, and all of a sudden, the game is tight, and every save that you make or that you have to make could mean the difference between a win and a loss. I mean, it'd be so much easier for Brossoit if, you know, the Jets would have gone up 3-0, and then he can play with a little bit more of house money, sort of saying in the game, you know, if I make the next save, it's good, but if I don't, we're still ahead, right? But at 1-1, you know, you're late in the game or in the late stage of the second period, early stages of the third period, you know, all these saves are so important, and mentally, that is really hard, and I was very impressed. He moves really well laterally. He looks like a different goaltender. He doesn't look like the goaltender that I remember Brossoit being with the Edmonton Oilers, and I know that he had a few good games that led to a contract for him, like a one-way deal that paid him pretty good, his first big contract with the Edmonton Oilers, but for the last couple of years, I had a tough time. He looked more of a compact, more of a goalie that was searching his style, searching the way he was going to play. But I think he's very quick on his feet. He moves well laterally and has made some really big saves in a tough situation to get a win last night. I think the Jets should be very happy with his performance last night and throughout the season so far.
Marty Biron is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to Birchwood Nissan Infinity Winnipeg Jets game day. The Jets and the Leafs will do battle later on tonight. Marty, I wanted to ask you about Leafs goaltender Freddie Anderson. He doesn't really get often talked about in the upper echelon of NHL goaltenders, but is he better than he gets credit for?
See, the problem with Freddie Anderson is that he usually starts the season slow. There's always something that you end up talking about with Frederick Anderson. Last season, I think he was lost. He was, challenging a lot. He was caught outside of his crease a lot. Then he started to back into a more of a simplifying type of game for him. He's got the size. He doesn't have to be a foot or two outside of his crease. He can make saves from inside his crease and help his lateral movement. And this year, it's been, well, let's talk about Matthews, Tavares, Marner, even the Willie Nylander contract situation. So nobody really pays much attention to Freddie Anderson. I think he's played well, but I think there's another step there. And if the Leafs want to be that team at the end of the season, they're going to have Freddie Anderson just elevate this level a little bit. We all saw, like, the 1-0 game Tampa against Colorado last week, the goaltending by Vasilevskiy, the goaltending by Semyon Varlamov, those are the type of performances, the type of outings that the Leafs want Freddie Anderson to get to. But it seems like the first couple of months of the season, it's, you know, ups and downs, and then he doesn't find the consistency until later in the year. So hopefully that can happen sooner than later for him so that the Leafs can just feel like they've got everything they need in their lineup. And that's going to help their defense as well. Everybody's talking about the Leafs' defense. Well, Freddie Anderson may have a say in that with the way he plays.
Marty, last goalie question for you here. John Gibson in Anaheim, the last few years he's put up really good numbers, lots of wins for the Ducks. His save percentage has been excellent, but he's had injury problems, and the knock on him has always been he struggled in the playoffs. Early on this year, I mean, his numbers have been phenomenal. I think his save percentage is still around 940. I mean, is he starting to get the credit that he deserves? Drew asked you about Freddie Anderson, but do you think John Gibson has to start being talked about as, you know, one of the top 10, top 5 goalies in the league?
I think you can start talking about John Gibson as a top 10 goalie. I did not have him on my list to start the season as a top 10. When I put my list on Twitter, I got a lot of flack for it, for not including John Gibson. But at the same time, the problem with John Gibson for me is I think he makes a lot of good saves, gives up a lot of bad goals, and he's very unathletic type goaltender. I think that, to play the game now in the National Hockey League, you have to have a little bit of everything. And I think John Gibson, maybe because of injuries, maybe because of the way his body is, you know, not everybody is flexible. Not everybody's got really good hips and good strength of core to be able to maneuver around the crease. I think he's very much of a straight-on type of goaltender. And the Anaheim Ducks give up a lot of shots, and they give up a ton of shots from the slot. So John Gibson, even though he's got a great save percentage, he's got an even better expected save percentage because, you know, he faces a ton of high-quality, tough scoring chances, and he makes saves. But as soon as you get him moving side to side, there's a lot of holes, and there's a lot of he's a little slower moving laterally than some of the top goalies in the National Hockey League. So for that reason alone, he's not a favorite of mine. Like, I don't watch the games and say, I can't wait to see John Gibson play. I watch games and I say, oh, I can't wait to see Devin Dubnyk play. I can't wait to see, you know, Andrei Vasilevskiy play. I can't wait to see Connor Hellebuck play. But John Gibson is not in that list. And he could get back up there if he continues to play like that. But I need to see this type of playing consistently from him. And I need to see that he's not going to give up the bad goals, or his pucks are not going to go through him as much as they've been in the past.
Yo, Marty, I know we're limited by time, but I got to tell you, I could talk goalies with you all day long. I love it.
And I got one last question for you, Marty. Of Jonathan Quick and Sergei Bobrovsky, which one are you more concerned of?
I am concerned with Jonathan Quick because I think Bobrovsky is a hardworking goalie that, he's had some ups and downs in his career, but he's always seems to be there at the end. And I think that the way John Tortorella coaches, it probably will be more suitable to helping his goaltender with how defensively they are and blocking shots and all of that. Jonathan Quick, what's tough to watch now is that he's had the injury and he's not getting any younger. And Jonathan Quick is much more of a field type of goaltender where he's a little bit erratic. He'll be very far outside of his crease. He'll come across in a split save. And it's all about timing. It's all about feel. Well, when you're not playing a lot, like he did the last, two, 3 weeks because of injury, or if you're playing and you're not getting success, you start tweaking things. You start changing things. And for Jonathan Quick, it's not technically. It's not like, let's go to practice and work on your movements and work on your technical elements. It's all about feel and timing. And if you don't have that, it becomes very, very hard to play goalie. So I'm a little concerned for Jonathan Quick right now.
Marty Biron is a Buffalo Sabres analyst. You also know him from his work with our friends at TSN. Marty, always appreciate your time. Thanks so much.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. Have a good game tonight.
Thanks, Marty. When we come back, more on the Jets and the Leafs ahead of tonight's rematch. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Birchwood Nissan Infinity Winnipeg Jets Game Day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
It's just about trying to find a way to unshackle our group, just seems like we're carrying a lot of weight, carrying a lot of expectation, and it's inhibiting us from kind of playing our game.
That was Winnipeg Jets captain Blake Wheeler Monday night after the victory over the St. Louis Blues, talking about the team, talking about their performance on the ice, talking about the way that they have played a lot of the games this season. A lot of people have some concerns about the Winnipeg Jets given the the flow of those games, I think, is the best way I can say it, where they've seen the Jets be a little lackadaisical, be a little maybe sluggish at times, albeit with a 7-3-1 record, so that's a pretty good way to be sluggish, but perhaps the record is flattering based on the performance that's been on the ice. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by our good friends at Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for over 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Remember, Bernstein's now offers door-to-door service where you can get delivery right at your door. Go to shopbernsteins.com. Again, get it right to your door. You don't even have to get off the couch. Nice and easy. Just Google it, find it, order it, eat it. bernsteinsdeli.com.
I hope if you order it, you eat it.
Well, maybe you're ordering it for somebody else. You could be generous.
Well, someone's still eating it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that it's just being ordered and then just like being thrown out. That seems wasteful to me. But
well, I guess it could go in the freezer.
Yeah, no, at some point in time, it's going to be eaten, is what I think we're both confident in saying, is that at some point in time, it's going to be eaten. The Jets, Ezzy, 7-3-1 through the first 11 games of the season. A very good record. But the play, from my perspective, and the manner in which they've been winning games, leaves me with a lot of concern. That,
well, you're not the only one.
I know I'm not the only one. I just don't know that they can keep up this record with the performance that they've been displaying on the ice so far.
Yeah, and you know, I'm not so sure about that. And you know, this is a 52 win team last year. They go all the way to the Western Conference final, and I agree with you. I think the St. Louis Blues game was the best example. And I don't want to toot my own horn.
Yes, please don't. Nobody wants to see that.
But after those first two periods, I was talking to Paulie Edmonds and Dave Minuk during the break when, you know, Paulie Edmonds gets a little break.
Yeah, I was at that game. Why weren't you talking to me?
Well, I could have been.
Okay.
But and I was telling you this too. I mean, I was telling you guys, even though it was 3-1 and the Jets had played pretty god awful.
Yeah.
I thought that there was a good chance that the Jets were going to tie this game up and win. And the only reason I said that, the primary reason why I said that, is because they had done that in all of the previous games that they've won. Not all of them, but they had done that before. Obviously the home opener, season opener, I should say, in St. Louis, they didn't need to come back. No, they were
dominated.
In control.
That was the one game this year. Right. The LA game certainly as well, maybe to a little bit of a lesser extent. Those are the two games that I think that they have played consistent efforts from start to finish and have been able to exert their dominance on their opponents.
But they did that against Carolina. They came back after Carolina took the lead. They did it against Arizona. They did it against Vancouver.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, I'm concerned, but they keep winning. And
It's sort of a conundrum.
Well, it's a conundrum, and it's hard to explain. And I think you could definitely make the argument that it's concerning and that, you know, it might not be sustainable.
That's the question. Is it sustainable?
Especially when you start to play some tougher teams, right? Because the Jets' schedule, let's be honest, has not been the toughest schedule. I mean, this is the first back-to-back set.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you've had some pretty bad teams in there.
Yeah.
Vancouver, namely, Detroit,
LA.
Arizona.
Yeah, those are all teams.
I mean,
LA is
not a great team. So I'd say out of the 11 games, you've probably had 5 or 6 pretty easy games. Obviously, Nashville's in there. Toronto's in there. You know, Dallas has improved this year.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is that the Jets haven't really had 3 great periods in a lot of these games. I'd point out to maybe a couple of the games. We've talked about the St. Louis game was a complete game. The home opener against L.A.
Let me ask you about
liked the game against the Edmonton Oilers, at least 2/3 of it.
Let me ask you about Blake Wheeler's comments. You just heard him off the top coming back from break there. He's talking about the team is sort of, they're playing with the expectations on them, and the weight of the expectations might be, you know, he talks about, you know, they played the third period as an unshackled team, implying that the first 40 minutes they felt the pressure and that they felt shackled and they weren't able to play the game that they want to play. What's going to flip? What's going to change that allows this team to play that loose style that we saw so much from them last season and then in spurts this year?
Well, I agree they haven't looked loose at times. But I wouldn't go as far as to say they haven't looked confident, because I don't think a team that lacks confidence can come back in the second and third periods like they have, right? Like a team that lacked confidence, to me, is a team that doesn't come out with a second period like the Jets did.
They
put that first period in the rear view mirror.
Do they have some arrogance then? Let me flip it around that way. I don't know if they have arrogance, Drew.
I mean, they're a top team in the league. Forget the predictions and all of that. I mean, this is a team that was second in the NHL last year. I think they're confident.
But do they have...
Not cocky.
Well, I mean, but the ability to just turn it on like that, or the knowledge, or the... that they've been able to just turn it on like that and come back in games and sure. even win games where they've only played right. one of the three periods.
Right, and it comes back to what we talked about during the first hour. They have so much skill in that top six. I mean, you could make a strong argument the Jets' top six is the best in the league, right? With Patrick Laine, Mark Scheifele, Blake Wheeler, Nikolaj Ehlers.
Yeah, we know the players.
Brian Little. I mean...
Kyle Connor.
Yeah, I mean...
Yeah, it keeps going and going.
I mean, they have so much firepower in their top six. If Wheeler's not having a good game, you know, usually Shifley's having a good game. Or if Laine and Ehlers aren't having a good game, Kyle Connor's having...
Been good this season yet.
He's still got... What does he have, 10 points?
I'm going to have to look it up real quick.
He's still close to a point a game.
But he hasn't been great. He hasn't taken over games like you saw last year. I mean, you know, and I think even Blake Wheeler himself would admit that he has struggled to some extent with his play. He's got 10 points. He's got 2 goals and 8 assists, which, I mean, it probably is a testament to the fact...
Right, if he's playing awful and he's almost a point a game, I mean, look out, right?
Well, that's just it. When is that look out going to happen? When is this going to... At what point in time does this move from being just a blip versus how they're going to be all year
long?
Well,
and I don't have the answer. And I don't think, you know, anybody has an answer right now because... At what point is this a small sample size, right, Drew?
Right.
And I think that's your point. I mean, we talked about this after 4 or 5 games, and now we're talking about it after 11 games. And tonight's a big game. I think, you know, if you see the Jets come out and they have that quote-unquote, you know, full 60-minute effort, and they're able to win this game, I think that's going to shut a lot of people up. And then the game's coming up against Florida. Let's be honest, we're going to talk about this next segment. Or 2 segments from now, the Panthers are not off to a great start.
No, they're not.
I mean, they lost to the Red Wings in overtime.
Yeah, 2-3-3 in their first right. 8 games for the Panthers.
Right, and you know, obviously they've only played 8 games, whereas some teams like the Jets have played 11.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is, if you look at it from the perspective of standings, just points, I mean, those games are going to mean a lot more to the Panthers. Obviously, the Jets want those points, but the Panthers need those points more is what I'm saying. So those games against Florida and Finland, where one of them's a home game, one of them's a away game, but they're both a neutral site game,
mm-hmm.
if you think about it, I mean, those are going to be tough games. So I think, you know, the next 3 games are going to tell us a lot about this Jets team. I mean, if they're able to win all 3 of these games or 2 of these 3 games...
I think tonight's game is big. I think the Jets played poorly on home ice on Wednesday. They lost, you know, when the marquee matchup early this season, you know, with all the hype and the hullabaloo of NBC and everything else being in town. I think tonight's game is a big game. There's a lot of adversity there's a lot of excuses that the Jets could have for folding tonight.
Yep.
You know, this is their 5th game in 7 nights, back to back, et cetera, et cetera. Leafs have been waiting for them. If the Jets are able to put forth a good performance, a good 60 minutes tonight.
Yes.
I think it's going to go a long way for their confidence to say that, yeah, we haven't been great through the first 11 games or the first 12 games this year, but look how we played now, and now we're going to go, now our play on the ice is going to begin to match our impressive record on the ice.
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying if the Jets come back and their record is, you know, 9-4-1
mm-hmm.
after 14 games, I mean, are we going to still be talking about this? If they get 2 wins out of the next 3?
I think it depends on how they play. That's the problem, is that they're winning without playing that well, which is a good problem to have, but I think fans want to see a more consistent effort than what they've seen. When we come back, Mitch Peacock is going to join us. We'll look back to see what the Winnipeg Jets AHL team, the Manitoba Moose, are doing. Mitch Peacock up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Birchwood Nissan Infinity Winnipeg Jets Game Day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.